from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, everybody. A happy Tuesday to you. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. I want to thank everybody who's rocking with us on ESPN 1320 on the Odyssey app. And, of course, everybody watching online at twitch.tv/ESPN1320 and youtube.com/ESPN1320. Why can't I hear myself? There we go. Now we're tapped in. On a Tuesday, August 20th. And before we get anything started here, James, give me one moment to give a big shout out to my mother. Mom, happy birthday. I purposely did not text you this morning because I wanted to say happy birthday for the first time on the radio. I will also send a nice heartfelt text to my mom saying things that I don't necessarily want to just say on the radio. You know, that's just for Mama. Shout out to Mom.
Shout out. Yeah, she did a really good job of raising you, Kyle.
Wow, that's so nice. Thank you.
There it is. You're a very thoughtful and conscientious young man.
Sometimes.
I think you are, Kyle.
The parts of me that yell at the television and curse at the television during sports actually surprisingly come from Mom, not Dad.
Okay.
That is a firmly Mom trait.
Okay, so you've driven with me, and first of all, I'm a super aggressive driver, and
yes,
and I talk trash the entire time.
Yes, it is to people who don't deserve it.
I talk trash to everybody the entire time. That is something I got driving with my grandma when I was young.
Oh, hell yeah, that's awesome.
And my grandma had a green 72 Nova.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like, so not a Tesla.
No, but a Nova with like a big V8, like she could light it up.
Just a bus.
Yeah, like a muscle car.
Yeah.
And she was a horrible driver and talked trash to everybody and yelled at me and my brother the entire time to stop fighting. That was my grandma in a nutshell.
Incredible.
Yep.
Incredible. So salute to my mom. It is her birthday today and wanted to shout her out. The reason I'm a fan of the 49ers.
All right.
And the A's.
Nice. Nice.
Shout out to mom and all the moms everywhere. I don't want to say on my recommendation because I don't think I recommended it necessarily.
You kind of did, but that's okay.
I just said I watched it.
Okay, so I came downstairs yesterday in the evening. I was upstairs doing some other stuff. I came downstairs, and the wife was finishing up episode one, and I'm like, oh, Kyle said we have to watch this. And she's like, all right, you can go ahead and restart it. She's like, it's pretty crazy. And so we were watching the Lacey Peterson documentary on Netflix. Now, there's something about this very specifically. So it hits home because we were watching it unfold, right?
Yeah.
But it was even more personal because she's killed in December 24, 2002,
yeah.
Right? She's 8.5 months pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
My wife at that time is like 7 months pregnant.
Yeah.
In 2002, we have our oldest son in May of 2003.
Yeah.
So we're watching this play out, like, as they found her, like, I think it was what, in April?
Yeah. Like
of 03.
Yeah, because then the trial was 04.
Yeah, yeah. So again, my wife is at that point eight and a half months pregnant. Mm-hmm. So it really struck a chord. I thought it was well done. I don't like how they try to humanize him at all. And then I think the one thing I would point out, like, if people are out there who want to watch his documentary, I think it's tremendous. The mom is one of the strongest people I've ever seen.
Yo.
Just
an absolute G through the entire thing.
The entire thing, man. You get to the end and it's just like, oh my
gosh. So what I liked about it, and I'm one of the people that's into true crime.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I liked about this particular documentary was it wasn't about, because you'll watch sometimes a true crime documentary that just clearly is just trying to really drive home, like, here's all the gory details. Here's these photos, and here's all this stuff that happened to this person, and here's what they're. That's not what's interesting to me. And what I liked about the Lacey Peterson documentary was that it was not that. It was about. I mean, the investigation, because I mean, if you're I'm 34,
mm-hmm.
and I barely remember that. I was 12, 13, 14 when that was really going on. So I knew it was a thing. I knew the names Lacey Peterson and Scott Peterson.
Yep.
But I had never, I'd never gotten, you know, details on how it all kind of played out. So that was interesting. And if you're 25, you have no recollection of that.
Mm.
25, 20, 25, 18, like, you just have no recollection of that.
Yeah.
So it's like a new thing for you. But I like that they didn't go into all the insane detail about all the awful
Zero.
Things that happened.
Zero detail.
Yeah, and it was just about her, mm-hmm. and you know, to an extent him. I just can't wrap my brain around that his, and you have to kind of tell both sides of this story. I get that that's kind of the documentary.
Yeah.
But they don't, and I promise we're going to talk about sports, but they, that his family, and again, I've never experienced anything close to this, so I don't know the psychological trauma that his family goes through, but that his, like, sister-in-law went to law school so she could try and better fight to get him out because they still maintain his innocence.
It's the most ridiculous. That's, it's, okay.
Like I said, I've never been through it. I don't know. I've never had to deal with anything close to that level of difficulty or tragedy.
Yeah.
Or guilt or shame or grief or whatever they're experiencing. But I don't know how you don't watch this and you go, oh yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he very obviously did this.
Yes. I don't know how you do either. And so there's a couple of things. Number one, I think anytime you watch some of these true crime documentaries on Netflix, they usually lose their way for an entire episode with stupid internet sleuths.
Yes.
And it's the most annoying thing. I just want to skip the episode.
Yep.
You know, there are certain episodes of, like, Welcome to Wrexham, which are nothing but promos, and you just skip, go to the next episode.
Good to know. I've not,
like,
watched it yet.
You're like, oh, this is great. This is great. Oh, look, this is a promo.
Yeah.
Skip. Right. So, and with Netflix, they typically do, and they didn't do that with this. There was no super sleuthing. There was no anything else. I thought that their depiction of the characters, like, felt real.
Yeah.
And even the mom, like, again, at the end, the one thing I did notice, she mm-hmm. never once mentions what would have been her grandson at all. It was just really harsh. But then also just her saying, like, you know, she trusted somebody.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to take care of her.
The mom says, I trusted him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, man, that was brutal. But the other thing I like about it is just that. They didn't go off on these weird, like, because when we went into it, I thought, because in my mind, again, what I remember of this is like, oh, he obviously did it.
Oh, yeah.
That was just what was in my brain. So when I turned this documentary on, or when my wife and I turned this documentary on, it was, and we're talking, if you're just tapping in, we're talking about the Lacey Peterson documentary on Netflix. I was expecting it to tell some other story. Mm. Like, hey, here's all this stuff, but hey, here's some paths that you think maybe he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Here's the alternate kind of telling of this story. And so I was, and so when, and again, keep in mind, I was 12, 13 when this was going on. I don't remember what was happening. But when Amber Fry gets introduced, his girlfriend.
Yep.
My brain immediately, again, having watched enough true crime documentaries, I went, oh, she's in on it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but it turns out that she's just a gangster who went, hey, this guy sucks. I'm going to help out however I can.
Yep.
Because she could have easily just slunk into the background and gone, nope, don't know anything. Nope, just didn't know he's married. That's crazy. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But she told the police everything. She continued talking to him on the phone and recording calls for the police,
yeah,
and doing all this stuff to try and get to the bottom of this. And then to be present in as much as she was in the documentary, I thought was really, really brave for her to do that. And
yeah,
man, she was
really
she was,
incredible.
Was
I think
awesome too.
Brave is when you come when you get to the end. That's what the story is. It's about people who are showing,
yes,
you different ways of being brave,
mm-hmm,
and someone who was a total coward.
Yes.
And, you yep know, had a million different ways out, but chose like the most egregious, horrific way,
yes,
to get out of a situation,
yep,
for no reason.
Yeah.
It's horrible. So anyway, yeah, I thought I would bring it up because you did recommend that I watch it. And it was tough, man. We binge watched. It was tough.
Yeah, man.
It's emotional.
Like you said, and not only that, but you didn't live in Berkeley at the time, right?
No, no.
But you had lived out that way.
I lived in Berkeley right before that. Like we were here in Sacramento.
Yeah.
You know, like my wife was in law school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like it's in Modesto. It's like right down the street. My grandparents lived in Modesto.
Yeah.
Growing up, I would go to Modesto all the time.
But then he drove out to Berkeley. Drove out to the Berkeley Marina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so that's just, man.
Oh, no. I've been, the Chevy's right there used to be Charlie Brown's. And man, we used to go there all the time. It's right there. It's just all of it is right there. It's wild.
Crazy. So,
anyway, sorry.
True crime documentaries with Kyle and James.
We could do an entire podcast on true crime documentaries. I would love to.
Hey, when you said the internet sleuths thing, watch the one about I forget what it's called, and I think it's very famous, and I just don't. It's a blind spot for me. That hotel on Skid Row in LA.
Oh, yeah, I watched it.
And the girl that died there.
Yeah.
And it was all the internet people with all their insane conspiracy theories and all this stuff, and it turns out that she jumped in the water tank.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah,
it was a tragedy. It's this awful thing, and all these internet sleuths are trying to. Oh, that made me real mad.
Yeah, yeah,
that made me mad. I did not like that. I forget what it's called.
Tough,
but anyways. Cecil Hotel. Yeah, thanks, Mace.
There we go.
Cecil Hotel. That's it.
And Dave Garcia, I'm not really an honorary 209er, but hey, if you want to.
Hey, low key. Kind of low key.
I grew up, I had to drive down there all the time. My grandparents lived out. There's a big waterway. They had like a little bridge, mm-hmm, across the. I don't know what it's called. And mm-hmm, anyway, the water flows right through the middle. And there's roads that go down the side of it, and you had to like go over the top of it. Anyway, it'll come into my head
All right.
Anyway.
Honorary 209er, James Sam.
There we go.
I want to complain about this thing real quick, and then it'll be the last we talk about it for hopefully for a while. I want to talk about Brandon Ayuk. And I specifically want to talk about all the reporting that has come out about Brandon Ayuk.
Okay.
Because we've gotten nowhere. We have been at Niners Steelers at a standoff, or at a standstill.
Yep.
Niners not happy with Steelers' offer. Steelers have offer on table for Ayuk. Niners and Ayuk back to negotiating. They're close on a deal, but they're trying to overcome one last hurdle. We've now just kind of perpetuated this cycle of reporting over and over again.
Yes.
And I just, like, this is not taking shots at any insiders who are doing the reporting. I understand exactly what they're doing. If you're an insider who hasn't gotten a report out on Brandon Ayuk yet and you hear something, you're going to get that out totally. Do your thing. But I'm done having any reaction to anything Brandon Ayuk related that is not he is traded or he is signing. Because those are the two options. Yes. We know what those are. We know the Niners are back to the table negotiating with him. We know they've upped their offer. We know that they have Mike Garofalo from NFL Media said they've got the years down, they've got the money down, but there's this one hiccup with the last year of the deal. He wants more guaranteed money in the last year of the deal, and that's not how these contracts work. So da-da-da-da-da. That's our and like, okay, great. Then that's where we're at. I don't need another report from today going, oh hey, Niners and Steelers, they have a trade in place. Like, yeah, no, we know. We know.
It kind of feels like, Kyle, it's done. Like, we know the outcome, I think. I think we know the outcome. We're just waiting for the final report that it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And what do the dollars look like?
Yes.
And Brandon Ayuk is back in San Francisco.
That's what I think will happen.
And everyone will be hugging each other, and we'll get to see the video and all that
right.
stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't know, like, the big video of the bro hug and all that,
uh-huh.
that was our guy Sean Cunningham. He said everyone else was looking for Trent Williams, and he happened to pan over with his camera and caught. So like a lot of the video of like the bro hug and stuff.
Good for him.
That was our guy Sean Cunningham, who always like has a camera on his like attached to his head.
Honestly, that's one of the things that watching the TV guys work, whether it's on the floor or during the game. Or whatever. It is just incredible.
Yeah.
Right? It's just something. It's one of those things that I look at and I go, I just don't think I could do, because there's like an innate sense of what to do, how to do it, when to do it, where to be. And Sean's ability to know exactly where to fix his camera at all times.
Yeah.
It's never... Something will happen on the King's bench during the game.
Yep.
And it'll be like, oh yeah, Sean just happened to have his... Like, how do you do that?
Well,
there was a game... How do you know...
I've been a spotter for him on plenty of these. Like, hey.
Oh, hey, that's the secret.
We got something going on. And boom.
That's the secret.
Although Sean is on top of it. It's really wild to watch. And then it's really fun because Matt George has learned from Sean how to video during games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fun to watch them go up and down the court, and then as soon as a play happens, they dip up to the scoreboard so they know exactly
yep.
when the game is, at what point in the game it is,
yep.
and then they go down to the other end, and it's like, did you get that? No, I didn't get that one. Did you get that one? Yeah, I got that. You should see the angle I got on that. And so they're rewinding and like clipping in like real time. Like it is fun to watch. They're right next to me.
Yeah, they do a great job for sure. But back to the Brandon Ayuk stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's just no, there's nothing, here are the three things that will move me.
Okay.
A trade happened, a signing happened, or the 49ers are engaging in talks with a new team.
Mm.
If the Jaguars or the Bills or whoever, all of a sudden they enter the fray and the Bills are going to offer a first round pick and Gregory Rousseau or some insane thing.
Yep.
Where the Niners are all of a sudden willing to pull the trigger on a trade. That will move me. But for now, I'm done. I don't care about the Steelers anymore. I don't care about the Brandon Ayuk negotiation anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let me know when it's done. That's where I'm at.
No, I'm with you. I get that.
I don't think there's any more levels we can go.
No, there is a certain amount of just oversaturation that we reached like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I think everyone's lost interest. They're like, okay, like, look, we're just sick of it.
Yeah.
We're sick of it. We don't want to discuss the fifth and sixth and seventh wide receivers on the team because we have to, because Brandon Ayuk might not be there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to discuss who's going to make the team and who's not at the
nope.
very back end because
nope.
we kind of have to.
Sounds awful.
Yeah.
Sounds really awful.
It does.
And that's where maybe this is just Ayuk being a pain. I don't know. I'm not in the negotiation room, so I don't want to be super strong one way or the other on this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is just Ayuk being a pain in the ass. Maybe he is asking for guarantees in a deal that no player ever gets. And maybe that's a real sticking point, but to me, if you're the Niners, You've given all this time because, according to all the reporting, they didn't negotiate from like May until just very recently. They weren't negotiating. So to me, you've now waived your right as a team to nitpick on contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what this is, again, I don't know exactly. But if it's Ayuk being a pain, then stop being a pain. Sign your damn contract. Do the deal how everyone else does their deals and go.
Yeah.
But if this is a minor sticking point that like some guys get, some guys don't, the Niners waived their right to negotiate on that level and nitpick on that level when they didn't talk to him from May until the end of July.
Oh, yeah.
Or the beginning of August or whenever they reopen negotiations. Like you don't get to do this anymore because that stuff you should have been hammering out and ironing out 3 months ago.
Yep.
Like it's go time, dog. They practice today, tomorrow, and then I think they're off Thursday before playing on Friday, and then their preseason's over.
Mm.
Then they have like 2 Sundays until they're playing games. So whatever you have to do to get this thing across the finish line, if it means guaranteeing a little money in 2028 that you didn't want to guarantee, so be it. Adjust your roster in 4 years then.
Yeah. No, but I'm with you. Yeah.
This is just such a... I'm soured on both sides.
You have to be.
It's so annoying.
I don't know. At some point, they've got to figure this thing out. Like, and again, this is... If it weren't for the fact that, you know, the Niner... I would put a lot of blame on the player here,
mm-hmm.
except for the Niners do this every year. And, like, they've kind of lost the goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it anymore. You're the team who literally does this every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no more goodwill for you.
Yeah.
Like, just get it done.
That's it. That's where I'm at. All right. In some better news. So that's the last we're going to, until you hear, unless it is related to a depth chart or the roster or Brandon Ayuk signs or is traded, that's mm-hmm. the last we're going to talk about Brandon Ayuk.
Okay.
That's all I've got. I don't have the bandwidth anymore.
I'm with you.
To deal with another report of nothing happened. Cool. Thanks. In other news today, I don't know if this moves you because this might be a generational thing that is just past you.
Mm-hmm.
Backyard baseball is back, everybody. The beloved sports video game Backyard Baseball. This is according to an article from Sports Illustrated. Playground Productions, a production company dedicated to creating family-friendly content, announced Tuesday that the beloved video game series is returning in the coming months with the same aesthetic the games released in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Okay, so
this is thrilling.
I don't know Backyard Baseball at all, but I think it's your version of Hardball. So have you ever watched The Princess Bride?
Yes, one time.
Okay, so in the beginning, he's playing a hardball on his computer, and it's when his grandpa comes in to start reading him the book.
Yes. Okay.
That video game is Hardball.
Okay, got it.
Like, so when I was young, that's what we played, like on the Commodore 64. We started playing that, and then there were better versions as it, like, upgraded, even mm-hmm. at the NFL games at that point, like before Tecmo Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
There were other games that you started to play, but like Hardball was our version of. But it's really cool to see.
Yeah, dude. Backyard Baseball. It started out as like it's just individual characters from this game that the game created, and you pick a team, and all the players have different little attributes, and then you play in like a barnyard, or there's all these different like settings that you play, and it's a very rudimentary kind of baseball game.
Yeah.
Right. But again, this first came out in '97. And in by 2001, I think they had signed a deal with Major League Baseball to have one player from all 30 teams in the game as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So you could play with like a kid. I think Jason Giambi was the A's representative. And Mark McGwire was in it. Like Sammy Sosa is in it. And it was really, really cool. And it was just a really fun way to burn time during the summers.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone I know who is a sports fan played this game at least a little bit. And now it's coming back. And that's really cool. I doubt I'll play it much because it feels like one of those things that I'm going to go to play and there's going to be a nostalgia kick for 5 minutes and then I'm going to go, okay, I'm not. No.
This is bad.
I'm kind of past this now. But maybe there will be new innovations. Maybe it'll be a little bit different. They said it's just going to have the same aesthetic. They didn't necessarily say it's going to be the exact same game. I don't know what platforms it's going to be on. But for anybody who's like probably between 28 and 37, this is a moment. And this is really, really cool. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I was so happy when I saw this morning.
Very cool.
Like if you go to next time we go to a Rivercats game, we'll find people that look in general in my age range.
Okay.
And we'll be like, hey, who's the GOAT backyard baseball player? And every single person is going to tell us Pablo Sanchez.
Okay.
Pablo Sanchez is incredible. He's got his little crop top with his belly sticking out.
All right.
He's got his hat that's a little too big. And he just rakes, dude. He's just incredible.
I'm in.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Adam L. says, Gretzky, Jordan, Tiger, and Pablo Sanchez. That's the list. That's the Mount Rushmore. I'm totally there. I'm right there with you.
That's amazing.
Will Z, Sports Illustrated's Will Z, says, as a 30-year-old, can completely confirm. Exactly.
See?
If it comes out, Spencer says, I play a game on my phone called Retro Bowl that kind of looks like Tecmo Bowl. That sounds like a blast, first of all. Second mm-hmm. of all, if they come out with a backyard baseball app where I can play this on my phone, dog.
Oh, you're in?
It might be curtains for me. I've been doing so much better with my screen time.
Oh.
Because, well, I got CarPlay with my phone. And so now when you run navigation or music or Apple News or podcasts or whatever I'm listening to,
yeah,
it doesn't count as screen time on my phone. So my screen time looks a lot better now. And I'm on my computer a lot, so I'm not on my phone as much. So I've been trying to do better about being off my phone.
Okay.
If Backyard Baseball comes back on my phone, night-night, dude. I'm back up. Dude, I was up over like 7 hours a day on my phone. That's bad. That's so bad.
I think that's my average.
Yeah, right.
That's 7.5, something like that.
Yeah. So if I'm down under like the last 2 weeks it says 10 minutes and 16 minutes a day was my average. That's wrong. There's no way that's the case. I'm on my phone way more than that. But I've got to be down under 3 hours.
That's good.
Yeah. But Backyard Baseball comes back on my phone.
Oh.
You're done. 10 hours a day.
You're done.
You might catch me like during the show just... Come on, Petey. Pete Wheeler guy.
That's amazing.
Kyron said he's at 14 hours a day on his phone.
Kyron, that's a problem. I hate to tell you, Kyron, but you have a problem.
I don't want to... I'm so sidetracked right now.
Yeah, that's wild. That's a lot.
14 hours... He says he does most of his work on his phone. Okay, that's fair.
Oh, okay.
That's totally... If you work via your phone, that's fine. Then I'm not begrudging you. Or if you drive a lot, if you do DoorDash or Uber or whatever, and your phone's just on constantly and you're driving constantly, okay, then I can see it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
14
Katrina
hours
says she blames ESPN 1320 for 6 hours of her screen time.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Katrina. That's a pass.
We'll take it.
You get a pass from us on that.
I think 6 hours, the first 6 hours don't count of your screen time.
Yeah, exactly. When you get up over 6 hours, that's when it gets to be too much.
So Kyron's really only at 8 hours, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, right. No, exactly.
Yeah.
I think so. Manny, stop. That's crazy. That's crazy. I'm not even going to say that on the air. If you would like to see what Manny said, go to youtube.com/ESPN1320. D'Lo and Casey's 1,000th show tomorrow. Did you see that the official best show moment poll is out right now on the D'Lo and Casey Twitter feed?
Well, I think so.
I voted.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
I did. I have strong feelings about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't have any strong feelings about it one way or another.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. All right. We've got King stuff to talk about. We've got ESPN making NBA predictions. I think I'm in on Paul George. I think I'm just a Paul George guy now. I'll tell you what changed my mind there. Should the Raiders trade Davante Adams? And the A's very quietly creeping up towards 70 wins. Very quietly. They're on pace. We'll talk about that as well. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor on ESPN 1320. Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's
discount furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
And we didn't talk about Gershon Yabusele signing with the Sixers yesterday.
Well, he
did that before yesterday, but we didn't talk about it yesterday. Surprised? $2.1 million, 1 year?
Yeah, I'm surprised because his buyout, from what I know, is $2.5 million.
Wonder if the Sixers paid it.
Well, the Sixers can only pay $1 million of it. So, and that's not part of the deal. I mean, basically, the Sixers can pay the whole thing and take it out of his paycheck, but that leaves him with like $500,000 minus taxes and stuff. So,
interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. That's going to be a very interesting situation.
Do we know for sure that his team in Europe didn't just say, "Yeah, screw it"?
No, if they would have bought him out in July before the Olympics, the buyout was only $1 million. It jumped to $2.5 million. I think it's Real Madrid or something. Like, he was playing for a big club in Spain. And so, yeah, I'm intrigued to see how that all works out because, I mean, maybe he's got some endorsements or something that will hit in, that will bump his pay up. Maybe he's made a lot of money in Europe and he's like, no, that's where I want to go. But I thought he was super impactful, and if all you had to pay was a minimum, I'm like, man, the Kings could have paid the minimum.
I wonder if there was a subset of teams he would be willing to sign for whatever it comes out to. We'll just say $2.1 million just for ease here. But I wonder if it was like Sixers, Denver, Boston.
Oh yeah, he gave a list.
Yeah, there's like the top five teams or whatever in each conference, and that's where he would go and nowhere else.
Okay, that's possible. Yeah. It's also possible that the Sixers were just like, hey, we have a really good situation for you here.
Yeah, you might start.
Yeah, we can carve out a role for you because we have like 16 new guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good in the gold medal game, but really just good throughout the Olympics.
Yeah.
It felt like every time we had France on, we'd sit here and go, man, he was selling it. Kind of play.
No, I think so, too. I think he showed the ability to shoot the three ball. He's a bruiser. I think teams around the league have gotten away from players like him, and I don't know why. Like, you need guys like that who don't mind mixing it up. And
I'm kind of interested to see if the... Because so much of the latter half of the 2010s and the early 2020s was about small ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was get small, pull the center away from the basket, and run him off the court. And that's how it... But now you look at what Minnesota did last year. You look at how Oklahoma City, to try and combat that, gives Isaiah Hartenstein a bajillion dollars to pair with Chet Holmgren.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder if that's where things are trending a little bit. Or if this is just a flash in the pan, like, hey, this is a very specific thing that Minnesota did that was effective, and Dallas as well, with granted, a little bit differently.
The two rim runners.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And again, they deploy them a little bit differently than Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert got deployed. But if this is just a kind of very West specific thing that teams feel like they have to do to compete.
I think it's interesting. The league is quietly... Like every team, almost every team has a really good center. Like we've gotten to that stage where, you know, even like just to pull up like the Suns, for instance, the Suns, I would put their center like, you know, 20, 22, Yusuf Nurkic.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still really talented.
Yeah.
And I think that the way that the league has gone was to have your center space the floor, and the more spacing you can get, the better. And I think we're starting to see sort of a revival of the shot blocker. Klingon going in the top end of the draft, I think, was big. Guys like, Walker Kessler, Rudy Gobert, like those guys, they're starting to make a little bit of a run here to break up some of that stuff. And, you know, the league is always going to be that way. As soon as you think you figure one thing out, they go back and they figure something else out that changes course. And I think it's good for a guy like Sabonis, because he's kind of a hybrid. You know, he can do everything on the court, except for maybe block shots, where a lot of other guys don't have all of the skill set that he does. And he's really good against those guys.
Yeah,
he doesn't mind the shot blocker guys. I was like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah, very good at getting into invading their verticality.
Yes.
Like getting into their body and not letting them get up. I was trying to find, I can't find a good way to rank these centers.
No?
No, I tried to, I'm on NBA stats. I was just trying to get a list of, but I mean, it's Joel Embiid, it's Victor Wembanyama, I guess Jaren Jackson, Nikola Jokic. Count Julius Randle as a center?
No.
NBA stats has him as a center. I don't count him as
a
center.
No, he's a power forward.
Alperen Şengün, Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Bam Adebayo, Kristaps Porzingis, Lauri Markkanen. He's not a center either.
Yeah, you didn't mention Domas either.
Domas, because I'm sorted in a... I sorted by usage just to see if I could get like the names up to the top, but no, Domas is way down here in usage at 21.
Even, you know, we brought up yesterday how I thought Zubats was so much higher than I thought he should be.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, where do you put a guy like DeAndre Ayton? Where do you put, like, there are a lot of players here.
Do you feel like it's more situational? Like, if you flipped, you mentioned Zubats, you just mentioned DeAndre Ayton, you mentioned earlier...
Nurkic?
Nurkic, thank you. If you just swapped all those guys by team...
Mm-hmm.
If DeAndre Ayton goes to the
let's just say he was on the Suns and you traded him to Portland for Yusuf Nurkic. Go ahead.
Yeah, like if you did that. Yeah. No, but I guess that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
I don't think either team got demonstrably better or worse.
No, I think
in a vacuum, DeAndre Ayton is probably a better player than Yusuf Nurkic.
Yep.
But
I think Nurkic is tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And more physical, and that's what they're looking for. They were looking for a little edge, and they also went away from like their pick and roll style, And I think that's where Nurkic is a better passer. Mm-hmm. Ayton is definitely a better pick and roll player and, mm-hmm. and a beast, you know, mm-hmm. if you get him downhill. So I think that you're always looking at like the give and take, but I think there are a lot of centers that are lumped into one giant group. And it's something we, again, we were going through the 2K rankings yesterday mm-hmm. and, you know, what was there, like eight centers in the 90s that were right above Keegan Murray?
Yeah, they were just all right. Because it's just like, yeah, hey, these guys are all, they kind of largely do the same stuff.
Yeah.
There's Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic who do their thing. There's Domantas Sabonis who does what he does. And then it feels
AD.
And Anthony Davis, yeah, is up there for sure. And I think I know think that there's Bam Adebayo is in there. I think Rudy Gobert is in there, especially defensively. But once you get outside the top 10, 11,
yeah,
I don't know exactly. It feels like there's that group, and then it's just same kind of guy.
Everyone, well, you either have the rim runner, or you have mm-hmm. the big guy who passes a little bit, and mm-hmm. you know the Valanciunases mm-hmm. and Vucevic.
Yeah,
like those guys are really good though.
Yeah,
like that's where I look at like Zubats. I'm like, he's not. I don't think he's in the top 20. And if he is,
but if you flip
Zubats
like and Nurkic, which team gets better?
Oh, I would probably take Nurkic, except for the fact that he doesn't stay healthy. Yeah,
maybe. But I guess his peak is better, but I don't.
You can't run with Zubats, so I don't think.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So that's what I'm interested to see over the next just to see if this trend of got two big guys.
Mm-hmm.
Is this all everybody gearing up to figure out how to stop Victor Wembanyama? Is this everybody gearing up to try and figure out how to stop Jokic? Is this a reaction to those reactions, or is this just a flash in the pan? Like everybody sees what the Mavericks and the Timberwolves did, and now all of a sudden they're trying to figure out.
Yeah, I think it's crazy because then
how to exist there.
Like the late 80s and early 90s were like, I think that is the peak of mm-hmm. NBA centers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's like 8 or 10 Hall of Famers.
Yeah,
like
Hakeem, Shaq, David Robinson.
Yeah, but like Dikembe Mutombo was probably eighth best center and a surefire Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But you're talking about like, again, Hakeem and like, it just, there's so many, Patrick mm-hmm. Ewing, mm-hmm. like, there's so many great centers. Mm-hmm. And then we go through this lull where it literally was Dwight Howard and no one else.
That's great. Howard led a team to the finals.
No one else had a center at all. Well, you're like, you know, the Kings go out, they draft like Spencer Hawes. Like, that's where we got to. And then, again, it kind of starts in 2010 with DeMarcus, where we start to see
mm-hmm.
the evolution of the center and what the new center looks like.
Yep.
And it's a guy who can run the floor and dribble the ball between his legs and make spin moves. And all of a sudden, that player can also shoot threes. And that's where we start seeing the Karl Anthony Towns, the Anthony Davis, like all of these players start to sort of morph after the Cousins' entrance into the league.
Yeah.
And there are players that could do it a little bit, but nothing like what Cousins could do. And so I think it's the league is very, cyclical, but like it just, like it's nonstop. Mm-hmm. Like everything comes back around.
Yeah.
You know, like we're in a, right now, well, for like maybe 8 or 10 years, we're in one of the greatest eras of point guards ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like just these point guards that were incredible. You got, you know, again, Russell Westbrook isn't even a top 10 point guard in NBA history, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's close, but I mean, the dude averaged triple doubles for like two or three straight seasons.
Yeah, he's a layup Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Same with Chris Paul, same mm-hmm. with Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. But it's so many more than that. And it's almost like De'Aaron Fox gets lost in the shuffle at 26 points per game.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, we're seeing like, so the league constantly evolves and changes
mm-hmm.
and I'm always here for it because I, you know, it's different. It's a very different league.
I do think it's because again, just with how kind of the playoffs played out last year, it was, the return of the big man, especially in the West because of what Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford did helping the Mavericks get to the finals. Minnesota knocking off Nikola Jokic with Rudy Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns. And I saw a lot of this kind of like return of the big man type of thing. But I think you're just seeing what you just brought up is the continued evolution of
I don't want to say what DeMarcus Cousins started, but we'll just start use him because we're here in Sacramento. Just kind of that evolution of like, oh, hey, if you're going to be a starting, like high quality All-NBA center, you need to be this skilled now. I don't think we're seeing the return of the big man, like the traditional back to the basket, get his ass into the post, throw him the ball and let him go to work. I don't think we're seeing that. And frankly, I don't think we'll ever see that again.
No.
Because it guys are too skilled now and teams are too good at getting those guys off the floor. But I think you are seeing that you have players who can do that. Domas can catch the ball in the post and bully his way to the basket and get a bucket. But also, hey, he's going to pull your center out to the top of the key, and he's going to make it really difficult for your defense with what he can do as a passer.
Mm-hmm.
You have Joel Embiid, who can score from anywhere on the floor. You have Nikola Jokic, who's a passer and can score from anywhere on the floor. You have Chet Holmgren, who I think is going to be a monster defensively, score from anywhere on the floor. Same thing with Victor Wembanyama. Hey, it's not the return of the big man. I think it's just the next evolution of, hey, small ball has been so dominant for so long. Now here are these centers who grew up watching the small ball Warriors and the Rockets trying to combat that and the Cavaliers trying to combat that. And they grew up knowing that, hey, you need to ball handle and you need to be able to shoot it and you need to be able to rim run. And so I think the quality of the big man is just getting better.
Yeah.
I think that's the ultimate direction we're heading.
No, I think so. I think, you know, players grow up watching, you know, guys like Kevin Durant shooting threes.
Kevin Durant, another great one.
We're talking about seven-footers who are shooting threes, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden we're seeing it all play out in Victor Wembanyama.
Mm-hmm.
And like, look, there might not be another Victor Wembanyama ever, but there also very well could be. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
That's the problem. We don't know what the next version looks like.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one advantage that I've seen from the NBA versus almost any other league. It's their adaptability and how the mm-hmm. game changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same court, the same basket, the same three-point line, the same everything, except for the game looks so much different. And I know we were, last week, they had the 84, or maybe it was the 86, like Lakers-Celtics up on TV. So right now, what do we have? We have Charlotte. And we have Orlando.
Young Shaq. Is that rookie Shaq?
Yeah, that might be rookie second year Shaq, something like that. And there's Larry Johnson, Grandmama going right at Horace Grant. I think that the way
Bill Curry.
Yep, there you
Sorry. Go ahead.
I think the way that the NBA changes from one generation to the next is super unique. Like in the NFL, we have all of a sudden, you know, a couple of great passers come in and there's way more passing than there used to be. Mm-hmm. There's way less running. And so you sort of have like this switch up, but it's still the same stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It is. It still looks the same every single Sunday. Where the NBA, I think if you look at different eras for the 86 game we're watching, and then if you fast forward like 2 years, the next game,
mm-hmm.
it totally looked different. All of a sudden there's a three-point shooter in the corner. All of a sudden, you're starting to see the evolution of the game, and I think the NBA game evolves as much as any game. And you know, I think it's about guys who are like ingenuitive and are trying to think of what's next for the mm-hmm. for the game. You know, even like guys like, while I didn't particularly like covering him, George Karl was extremely influential in the NBA.
Sure,
like his dribble drive motion offense, which he, you know, had Vance Wahlberg, like he sort of picked it up from somebody and ran mm-hmm. with it at the NBA level. It changed the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it created the rim runner.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
So now you have the 3-point shooter and you have the rim runner mm-hmm. at your center position. And mm-hmm. so like, it really does like morph as we're going along throughout history. And I think that's what's so intriguing about it. Again, to watch a center position completely go dormant
mm-hmm.
for almost a decade
mm-hmm.
and just have one guy running amok. Like, it was really, really crazy to watch. And mm-hmm. then you get to the other side of it and it's like, oh, the position just reset itself. And now it's totally different. And now Dwight Howard can't play in the league at age 29 because nobody wants his style of play anymore. It doesn't matter how you look like
crazy.
Superman. You're just not good at basketball in the modern mm-hmm. the modern NBA.
Yeah.
So you got to go play somewhere else, bro.
I kind of wonder.
Really weird.
I kind of wonder how, like, in the NFL, I have a theory that we're going to see, and I think you see Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers kind of trying it, just getting now as defenses get smaller and more spread out, you're seeing more nickel, right? It's an extra defensive back, sometimes two extra defensive backs. That's what made Steve Spagnuolo so good last year, was his ability to have more defensive backs on the field without getting pushed around in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the downside of having smaller defensive backs on the field. And so you're seeing, I think you're going to see offenses now kind of not every down go to I formation, 1990s, you know, smash mouth style football. But I think you're going to start to see more of that. And then you're going to see defenses get bigger to try and defend that. And then offense, and it's just going to kind of keep being this, oh, expand horizontally. Okay, now we're going to pack everything up. Oh, now, I can visualize that in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't visualize is the same thing happening in the NBA, where the game has evolved now, where it's all five players. The Celtics just won a title doing this. Like, all five players can do a little bit of everything.
Oh yeah,
there's not like a center. There's not there are players at positions, but it's not okay. The point guard is John Stockton. He is going to distribute, and the shooting guard is going to be the scorer, and the center is going to be under the basket. I just don't see like how in the NFL I can see the game expanding out. Everything's horizontal, sideline to sideline. Okay, now to combat that, offenses are going to get more compact. They're going to get bigger, and they're going to play bully ball. And you can see, I don't think I see a version of the NBA that ever goes back to, oh hey, we're going to have a center with his back to the basket on the block. Our point guard is just going to be a distributor. I think it's just going to kind of continue to be, and it'll look a little bit different, but I don't ever see a version of the sport where teams aren't trying to maximize, hey, all five guys have to do a little bit of everything. We're going to be switchable defensively. Everybody can hit a three. We have a couple, three, four guys on the court at all times who can handle the ball. I think it's just kind of stay that way. But like you just said, a game from 2015 already looks different than a game from 2024.
Oh, yeah.
And how does a game in 2030 look compared to a game in 2024? I can't like visualize it outside of everybody is 7 foot.
No, I think you're onto something there. And then I also like for those out there who wonder why I question like drafting Zach Edey at number 9.
Sure.
And then why everybody is so high on the Memphis Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm confused by it. It's because of what you're saying right now.
Mm-hmm.
The league is not going back to Zach Edey's.
I don't think so.
It's not. So unless Zach Edey is so transformative that everybody has to figure out a way to stop him,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the case. They're going to do exactly what they've done to every other big guy like that. You know, like guys like Steven Adams, guys mm-hmm. like there's so guys like Rudy Gobert gets played right off the court in the playoffs. Like, mm-hmm. see you, dude. Like you mm-hmm. can't play. So what are you going to do? In a situation where that's what your center position looks like. I don't know the answer, but what I do know is that the league isn't going to just revert back really quickly to make sure that Zach Edey feels welcome.
No.
Like, no, they're just going to take advantage of him. And mm-hmm. that's what, when I'm watching in the finals, I had watched plenty of Zach Edey play basketball, but in we get to the Final Four, and all they did was drag him outside the best they could. And then they got him in the pick and roll, and he could not hang backpedaling in the pick and roll. And mm-hmm. it's like, okay, man, that's how is that going to work? And maybe he gets better, maybe like all that stuff. But like the league is going to Victor Wembanyama's.
Mm-hmm.
The league is going to Bam Adebayo's. They're mm-hmm. they're going that direction. Anthony Davis is such a weird hybrid
mm-hmm.
that like one of the most unique players that we've seen. And you can hate Anthony Davis or you can joke around about, you know, Sabonis being 10-0 against him, but to disrespect how good Anthony Davis is, like
pretty good player.
Man, he can shoot the three. He's one of the best shot blockers in the game. He's a great rebounder. He can score in the post. He is a rim runner if you need mm-hmm. him to be. And on top of that, he gets a whole bunch of steals and a whole bunch of assists.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you, I had him in fantasy basketball, and that's when you start to appreciate a player.
Mm-hmm.
He's dropping 100-point nights every night in fantasy it's basketball. Crazy. And like my best players are averaging around 40 a night, and he's got like eight or 10 games in the season over 100.
It's crazy.
You're like, what in the world? And that's like we're seeing just like the league evolve at all times. And I always love watching it. I'm here for what it looks like today versus what it looks like, you know, a couple of years from now. And yeah. and there players come along that you just go, that dude right there is going to change the game.
Yeah.
And then there are guys like Steph Curry who get in the league and you're like, huh, look at that. He just evolved the game single-handedly, like, over the course of a 12-year career.
The wild thing with Steph specifically was, uh-oh, hang on. Here we go. My computer's trying to update. Stand by.
I was going to mention that because I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and I was waiting for the break.
No, we were close. I just didn't want it to. I think we would have been okay if I waited for the break, but I didn't want this to restart automatically because then it butchers our recording. Then I got to ask Jesse to work for me, and I don't like doing that.
There we go.
The wild thing with Steph, when you talk about him evolving the game, was it's so easy to see, and it's been easy to see for 4 years now, that Victor Wembanyama was going to be this transformative talent. That Victor Wembanyama was going to come into the league and it was going to be something we'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, his first year, he does it. The wild thing with Steph was even in year five, you didn't really see that. It wasn't really until their 2015 title run that it really took off of like, oh hey, this guy's just a little different now.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the crazy things with him, is that he signed a 4-year $44 million deal because he couldn't stay on the court.
Yeah, his ankles were bad, and I will say, like, I always give Steph like a huge amount of credit. I'll also throw Damian Lillard and James Harden in that mix. Like, I think those three guys have revolutionized the game. It's just one of them is so much better at winning than the other two. One of them has you know, the way you truly change the game is by winning rings. That's to me, because then you become a global. Mm-hmm. You're seen by everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so Steph's ability to play in the biggest games and hit some of the craziest shots we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like Damian Lillard did a lot of that too. James Harden has done a lot of that
for
too.
Sure.
And I've talked about, you go out and watch like rec basketball, everyone's got the little James Harden like sidestep thing.
Yep.
And that's part of the game now. But for me, it's Steph won, and his ability to lead a team to the NBA championship against LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
It elevated his status amongst people who watch the game, and they got to see a lot more of him. I still think, you know, again, Damian Lillard kind of hit out in obscurity in Portland.
Yeah, it was tough.
And now he's kind of hiding out in obscurity in Milwaukee. And, you know,
dang,
just different.
I have a couple things. One quick gripe, and then I want to continue this. You brought up Damian Lillard. That reminded me of something I wanted to talk about. But one of my biggest gripes is when people, and this is not like people aren't trying to discredit Steph. It's just they go, oh, because of Steph, everybody wants to shoot threes now. And, or the style of game has changed because of, the Rockets did that. Go back and look. The Rockets are the team that from like 2014 through 2019 were first in the league every year in three-point attempt rate by a lot.
Oh,
the Rockets are the team that did that. They introduced that, hey, 3 points is more than two. We're just going to blaze away from three all the time. Steph happened to come in and elevate his game around the same time as a very good three-point shooter. The Rockets are the ones that forced the NBA to change how they played. Okay? So if you want to bitch about how basketball is played now, blame Daryl Morey, not Steph. That's all.
It's Mike D'Antoni.
And Mike D'Antoni, thank you. Blame the Rockets.
Blame the Rockets.
Anyways, we have to go to break.
All right.
I want to talk about the Damian Lillard thing that you just asked, or that you just brought up. And then we'll get to some ESPN NBA season predictions, award winners, teams that are going to have big turnarounds, disappointments, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get to all that. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders on ESPN 1320 and Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And
thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.